Welcome to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's our fall membership drive. We'll talk about more about that in a moment. Last week, credit reporting agency Equifax revealed that hackers had gained access to the sensitive information of as many as 143 million Americans. Unlike previous big data breaches, in this case, Social Security numbers, birth dates, and home addresses were compromised. Joining us now to talk about the breach and the fallout is Washington Post tech reporter Brian Fung. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Thanks for having me.
So Equifax is one of the three major credit reporting firms. Their whole business is collecting data, right? Tell us more about what they do and what they have.
Sure. So in addition to being one of the nation's three big credit reporting agencies, Equifax is also a major data broker. It collects consumer information and in some cases sells it to third parties, and contributing to this overall data economy where, individuals' consumer data is bought and sold and contributes to the advertising industry where targeted advertising depends on this data as well as, other financial and marketing instruments. And we have seen, in some cases, not just Equifax, but also other major entities, fall victim to data breaches that result in the leak of consumer information. But this is really, with 143 million people affected, one of the bigger hacks we've seen.
Equifax waited 6 weeks to report the breach. I'm wondering if there's any rules about the reporting, especially since three company executives sold shares of their Equifax stock after the breach was discovered, but before it was reported.
That's a great question. And, currently this area is very loosely regulated. There are a number of state laws governing how and how quickly companies must disclose when they've been hacked. But for a long time, lawmakers at the federal level have been struggling to put together a national standard on this. Many political analysts believe that this could finally give some momentum to that effort. This is an issue that has been boiling for years now, so, I wouldn't hold my breath, but it is interesting to note that there is some greater momentum here in Washington for a national-level standard now.
What do we know about how the hackers got into this system? Was Equifax sleeping on the job, or is there a new tactic going on here? What do we know?
Well, Equifax has not been very forthcoming when it comes to how it was breached, and that makes sense. It's probably still talking with federal investigators and third-party investigators as well. So we're not likely to find out very much publicly in the near future, but lawmakers have called for congressional hearings to investigate, how and why Equifax could have been breached this way. But right now, it seems like the main focus is damage control.
They waited 6 weeks to report the breach. That's a lot of mortgage refinancing and mortgage closings and stuff in the meantime, that which is a primary reason for credit reports being tapped. That's a lot more data going into the system over the course of 6 weeks, right?
Absolutely.
What kind of protection? I mean, what kind of rights do the people have who fed information to Equifax, even though the company knew they'd been breached?
Well, it's important to point out here that, Equifax is not necessarily the holder of, information that would go into approving people for credit. What they do is essentially provide the credit reports to potential creditors, mm-hmm. who then would be the ones responsible for opening the accounts in people's names. So the real danger here is if a thief were to obtain the personal information of a consumer, take it to a bank or a credit card company or a mortgage lender, and try to use that information to set up new accounts. That's really the danger here for individual consumers.
How has the company responded to consumers? They set up a website to help people know if they're affected, but that's been controversial, right?
Yeah, the legal terms governing this special website that Equifax has set up has been the subject of a number of questions in recent days. There was a question as to whether or not by entering your information on the website to find out whether you've been affected, there was a question as to whether or not people were waiving their legal rights to participate in class action lawsuits against the company. But now Equifax has clarified its position, saying that if you do plug in your information and if you wind up buying or signing up for the company's free credit monitoring service, your right to participate in class actions will be protected.
Also, people I read were, and it might have been what you reported, are just putting in false information just to see how it responds, and it's saying, "Yeah, your data has been breached." I mean, is there any sense of consistency about what we're getting from those kind of queries?
Well, security researchers have pointed out a number of weaknesses and flaws in the Equifax data breach site, design weaknesses that security practitioners would probably not have recommended. For instance, Equifax set up an entirely new website, EquifaxSecurity2017.com, rather than using the industry calls a subdomain, a different part of its existing website, Equifax.com. A lot of security researchers have pointed out that, if a thief decides to set up a website posing as Equifax, that's probably how they would do it, making it look like the data breach site was actually, belonging to Equifax when in fact it wasn't. In this case, the data breach site does belong to Equifax, but to the untrained eye, it could be easily mistaken for a fraudulent website. So, some security researchers said the right way to go about it would have been for Equifax to set up a website at blank.equifax.com, which would have been more clearly associated with the main website.
There are several lawsuits in the works. What are the different points of, bones of contention?
Well, essentially, a lot of the lawsuits now brewing have to do with the way that Equifax, handled the information of the plaintiffs. And, some of these folks I've spoken to say, their personal information was used to create new accounts in their name without their knowledge, and it was only weeks later after the data breach was disclosed that they realized that this may have been that the hack may have been responsible for their credit being affected. So that's what these suits are all about.
Anything known? I know they're playing it close to the vest, but anything known about who might have done this hack?
At this point, it's all just speculation. So unfortunately, we don't have very many details about who may have been responsible. But it's probably safe to say that investigators are still looking into the incident, even as Equifax tries to manage the fallout here with this data breach site and a phone line for consumers.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but after the Sony hack, it seems like we found out pretty quickly who was probably behind it and what was going on there. What is there any obligation on the part of Equifax to reveal more information ever?
Well, in the case of the Sony hack, we got pretty clear claims of responsibility, from groups that investigators said were, tied to North Korea, but, and that was a case where someone came forward to say, yes, we did this, even though, actually proving that was rather difficult. In this case, we haven't seen anyone step forward in claiming responsibility, so there's not even that, step that we can hang our hat on in trying to determine who is responsible. In general, security experts say attribution when it comes to cyber attacks and data breaches is really difficult because it's easy often for attackers to hide their true identities behind different firewalls and proxies and so on and so forth. So, in this case, it seems like we're not going to get any clear answers on who is responsible anytime soon.
If you're concerned that your data has been stolen in this case, what's the next step? What should you do?
Well, there are a number of steps you can take. One is to freeze your credit, and this generally requires that you call the three credit reporting agencies individually and request that a hold be placed on your credit. This generally involves a $5 to $10 charge, depending on where you live, per each credit bureau. And once that occurs, no one except for a few companies and the federal government in certain circumstances will be able to view your credit report, meaning that if anyone tries to start an account in your name, the bank or the lender or whomever is responsible for handling that request would not be able to pull your credit and verify or create that account for the fraudulent individual. If you're not comfortable taking that step, you could also take a lesser step, which is to put a 90-day credit fraud alert on your account. You only need to call one of the three credit reporting bureaus to take that step, and it'll be relayed to the other two automatically. What this does is to essentially require that any new lines of credit that might be opened by a creditor would have to be verified by you personally. So the creditor would have to call you at a number that you would specify in order for the line of credit to be able to be opened.
Brian Fung, thanks so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Brian Fung is a Washington Post tech reporter. We'll have a link to his article about the Equifax hack on our website at WOSU.org/AllSides. This is Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher, and there is more of the program still to come. But first, joining me in the studio is News and Programming Director Mike Thompson with a very special offer for Tech Tuesday listeners.
Yes, for our Tech Tuesday listeners, it's your chance to win an Amazon Echo and support 89.7 NPR News. Anyone who gives during this hour only, will be automatically entered to win. And at the end of the hour, we will pick two lucky winners who will get Amazon Echoes. Your chances of winning are pretty good, but you only have about 40 minutes left to enter. You can enter online at WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. This opportunity is for this hour only. Support All Sides with Ann Fisher and our Tech Tuesday segments. You know you love these segments. It's tech news you can use. News like how to prevent your credit card from being used fraudulently after the Equifax hack. This is tech news you can use. You hear it every Tuesday here on 89.7 NPR News. So no gift is necessary. See our website for complete rules and information. But two lucky donors, two lucky pledgers this hour will get Amazon Echoes. Call right now, 1-866-897-9678, or give online at WOSU.org.
Yeah, just about 37 minutes remaining to enter to win an Amazon Echo and support 89.7 NPR News. This is something special we're doing for this hour only. This is just for Tech Tuesday listeners. So go to WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. Make a gift either by phone or on the web, and you'll be automatically entered to win one of the two Amazon Echoes. That's right. Two lucky winners will be selected at the end of this hour. Mike, would you like to demonstrate?
Yes.
Go for it. Alexa.
Alexa, what time is it?
It's 11:22 a.m.
It's as easy as that. You could be across the room and just ask her what time it is. Alexa, what's the weather today?
Right now in Hilliard, it's 61 degrees with clear skies and sun. Today's forecast has showers, with a high of 73 degrees and a low of 61 degrees.
What's the deal with Hilliard?
This Alexa is owned by our digital director who lives in Hilliard.
Okay.
It's linked to his phone, so it's personally linked to your device.
Okay.
So Alexa is a great tool to use around your home. You can get recipes. You can find out if the Indians won last night. You can find out what the weather's going to be. You can find out what time it is. And you can listen to WOSU.
Sorry, your Echo Dot lost its connection.
Okay.
Okay. Well. Doesn't always work. I think every time I say Alexa,
It lights up.
So you got to be careful who you don't name your dog Alexa if you have one of these.
Locally run and programmed and owned, 89.7 NPR News exists to make sure that everyone in our wonderful corner of Ohio has access to vital news and information that's global and local news and information. With locally focused programs like All Sides with Ann Fisher, 89.7 NPR News addresses issues that affect our community at local, regional, and national levels. It's valuable radio, but it relies on your donations to keep it on the air. Please give now. No gift is necessary, but your support helps pay for the programs you enjoy. Enter to win an Amazon Echo right now. There's only just a little over 35 minutes to go.
Yeah, just anyone who gives between now and noon can be entered to win an Amazon Echo. We have two of these to give away. No pledge is necessary, but you know, if you want to be guilt-free, if you win this thing, give $5 a month or $10 a month. Become a sustaining member of 89.7 NPR News. Support All Sides with Ann Fisher. You know, it's really one of our, it is one of our most popular programs. It's the program that connects you, the local listener, to all of the resources of 89.7 and NPR News, whether it be Tech Tuesday or Wellness Wednesday or the Reporters Roundtable on Monday, all the other interesting guests and topics that Ann covers. Support All Sides with Ann Fisher. Support Tech Tuesday. And have a chance to win an Echo. 1-866-897-9678 or online at WOSU.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. Video games are big business. In 2016 alone, the video game industry contributed more than $11 billion in value to the United States gross domestic product. And consumers spent more than $30 billion on games, according to the Entertainment Software Association. So most game development activity occurs on the coasts, as we know, but efforts are afoot to change that footprint and help grow the industry in Central Ohio as well. That push includes the two-day GDEX Gaming Expo at the Greater Columbus Convention Center later this month. For more information, visit the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Henry Bodden is the lead instructor for the Video Game Art and Animation Program at Columbus State College?
Community College.
Yep. That's what I couldn't say. Community College. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks.
And also Chris Volpe. He's CEO and co-founder of the Columbus-based game development company Multivarious Games. Welcome to the show.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Chris, your company has focused not only on developing games, but also on kind of priming the region to become a big player in the industry. How big is the video game industry in Central Ohio now, and what are you shooting for?
Well, we're shooting for the moon. It's definitely getting bigger over the past 5 years. Our community groups have growing, our educational programs have growing, so we have a really strong educational pipeline. The number of small businesses that are involved, not only in games for entertainment, but in a lot of the ancillary areas, games for healthcare, games for education, has been growing. So, I mean, we've seen a steady, steady increase, particularly over our neighboring states over the past 5 years.
How has Multivarious grown?
So we went from zero people to now six full-time, five part-time folks. So that's really exciting over the past few years. I started doing this full-time about 4 years ago. My background is actually healthcare. That's what I was involved in before this. And it's we call ourselves a game and app company, but really what we're trying to do is push a gaming industry here in Columbus and Ohio and to show that this can be a hot spot for this industry.
What are the challenges? Is it just perceptual type of things or are there logistical infrastructure kinds of issues?
I think it's a combination. There definitely is a perceptual issue that we have to deal with. I call it the games tax, where we're just not used to it. I was out at GDC, the Game Developers Conference in San Francisco earlier this year. 40,000 people, and you just walk around and everyone gets it. You can say, I do this or I do that, and you don't have to explain it for 10 minutes afterwards. That's not the case here, but that's something that we've been working on, showing that there is a lot of value in that. But I think that at the same time, we are moving in a really strong positive direction. Most of the younger generation, they already get it. They're excited about it. And a lot of the kids that are coming out of Henry's program and other programs across the state, there's a lot of schools now that have game development programs, either 2-year or 4-year. So we're beginning to see that perceptual change. But then we also have just operation and logistics. Since it's not something that we traditionally do as Ohioans, it's not something where a lot of our money is invested in. We do have a great tech infrastructure in Columbus, which makes this really a great place to start this industry.
Okay.
But there are some challenges that we need to overcome from sort of a larger perspective.
Is there enough of a talent pool? Henry, tell us about training talent to get ready for working in the video game industry or just the game industry.
Yeah, well, we've got a benefit of being a community college. And so what we're able to do with the program that I'm running is that we train students to go straight into the workplace where it's not theoretical. It's, okay, here's a skill set. You go to classes, you build it, you get an internship experience, and you leave and you go straight into the workforce. And we're also dealing with some of those perceptual issues where people look at it as just games. But a lot of my students, in addition to the game industry, are finding jobs with the same skill sets pretty much every place else because other companies, industries are using it. They just have disassociated with game development, even though that's kind of at its core, those core experience development, you know.
Give us an example of what you mean by that. What are they? They're graduating from your program and they're going out to do what?
Well, combination. So a couple of my students are working at multivarious games with Chris. Uh-huh. There's others that have started their own businesses. Some have gone to other companies like Nationwide to do training programs. I've got one programmer that went to Scott's. There's one of my adjuncts was working for Chase doing interactive experience development. Another one of the faculty members that was working with us is now at Nationwide Children's doing VR, both training
right.
and for.
They have a really interesting VR program there. Mm-hmm.
So it's got
reality.
A lot of applications.
Yeah. When people think of video games, they probably think of fun consumer games you buy at
yes.
GameStop or whatever that you play on computers, consoles, or smartphones. There's a market for creating games for corporations, though, and other organizations. Is that something that you're involved in, Chris Volpe?
Yeah. So sort of piggybacking off of Henry, on our client services side, where we work with traditionally larger companies like OSU, Battelle, MasterCard, Nationwide Children's Hospital, over 60% of our revenue is in the healthcare sector. So we're not making, you know,
was
games,
that your
games.
Segue?
Could be.
Okay.
Yeah. But also, I always like to put in there, too, that the video game, just the entertainment side of it, you know, globally is going to be over $100 billion this year. So the entertainment side of it alone has the economics behind it.
Yeah.
And that's not even counting virtual reality, which Henry mentioned, which is estimated to be over $75 billion by 2021. So those two sectors alone are huge. But there is a lot of work that can be done in all these other sectors and user experience, immersive arts, creative technology. And it's all the same tools. At Multivarious, we look at technology as a tool to solve a problem. So we try not to get too stuck on, you know, what tool set or language we're using. I'm trying to figure out what is the best solution to whatever your problem, whether it's a business problem or, you know, a customer
It sounds like
problem.
A classical way to educate somebody about anything. It's not – you're not getting put into a rut as far as the language goes and more about how to think about all different kinds of approaches.
Yeah. And so even with our students, the students that don't go directly into game production,
uh-huh.
a lot of cases they're hired simply because of their creative problem-solving abilities. When people get into game development, it is nothing but creative problem solving. It's
yeah.
here's things that need to happen. We have no clue how to do it. We've never done it this way before. And so each new project is a new set of challenges. And so from the educational side, we're training them to be creative problem solvers first. And then whether that's applied to traditional game development, to interactive applications, to training, to whatever, they have that core skill set that they've developed. And that's something that is really kind of unique to game development in general, where it is creative.
What kind of demand is there for your classes?
Well, it's growing. So I started about 7.5 years ago with 4 students. Now our game production course is combined between my art students and my cohort Peter Carswell students. And we've got 33 students that are going through the second year courses. So year by year, as word gets out, we're getting more and more students that are coming in. So right now it's mainly about just raising awareness, letting people know that this is a real thing. You can get jobs. And so the bulk of my conversations are actually with parents going, yeah, this is a career field that can be very lucrative for your child. It is skill development, but it's also difficult, so they're going to have to work at it. And then talking them through the process and the fact that this is an industry.
Yeah, and I'm actually an adjunct. So Henry's my boss during the Columbus State Days, but I'm teaching three classes right now, which I think is about 56, 58 students.
Mm-hmm.
So that's I teach an introduction to sort of the game design course. So and that's been growing. When I originally started a couple years ago, we were trying to get two classes consistently every time. Now we're hitting three.
Tell us about the GDEX. It's GDEX Gaming Expo,
yep.
Right? It's going to take place at the Greater Columbus Convention Center later on in the month. And for more information, folks should visit the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. They can learn all about the dates and times and so forth. But how does that play into boosting the reputation of Columbus? What are you expecting?
So that's big. So GDEX, the GDEX.com, is a really big deal. I'm saying that not necessarily to toot our own horn, but we started that 5 years ago as a way for Ohio developers to just kind of showcase what we were working on. We weren't expecting, I was like, if we can get 50, 100 people to come to this thing. It was at OSU. We had maybe a dozen exhibitors showcasing. We ended up having to push the event back because of so much interest. And when all was said and done in our first year, we had over 750 people from 8 states, 2 countries, 33 exhibitors, and all-day speaking sessions.
Why do you think that more than you expected happened?
Yeah, I think that we are hitting on something that just doesn't exist in the Midwest. I go to a lot of other cities and states around here, there is no GDEX equivalent in the Midwest right now. And that's pulling in, if you look at some of our speakers, we have people from Microsoft and PlayStation. I mean, we have top-tier speakers, like really amazing speakers. And then we just finished our floor plan yesterday, and we're looking like we have over 100 games on the floor. I mean, this is something that just seems to have a demand because all the people in the Midwest that are, you know, young people taking these classes, doing these programs, and then have to go to the coasts, they just don't want to do it.
Well, you know, I was it was on another show on another day that I can't remember, but the issue of the cost to develop a game versus the return on investment is ridiculous. And when you can lower costs on where you're located,
mm-hmm.
That makes a big difference. You could start to develop just as good a games, but for much lower price in the Midwest.
Yeah, we're definitely, if you just look at dollar for dollar, we're a much better deal than the coasts are from a development standpoint.
So people don't want to move out to the coast, but conversely, there's got to be a struggle to attract people from the coast to come to the Midwest. Henry?
Yeah, well, and that's one of the places where I think we're getting a lot of good support is like a few of the speakers that are coming back, actually many of them, are people who have had to leave to find jobs at some of the AAA studios. And they want stuff to be here. They want to be able to move back. And so they're happy to participate, to, you know, be speakers, to raise awareness, to try and make that a possibility. The other great part of it, Chris spoke about going to GDC last year. We went together. And one of the things that was amazing is as we were talking about this, everybody's looking at Ohio right now as the next big place to boom. We were getting a lot of awareness. We're getting a lot of people that were talking to us about it that were excited at that possibility of being able to move back to the Midwest.
Can you train enough people to fill the demand, though, if that boom does come?
Yeah. So that's one of the things. I go to a lot of entrepreneurial small business meetings. And the number one thing you always hear is we need more developers, right?
Yeah.
We don't have that problem. I have no problem finding developers. We have a community group that we support. It's over 1,300 members. We have the talent pool. There was actually a really interesting article about New Zealand, and the New Zealand government dumped money into their game industry to help prop that up. They're having that problem because now the industry is getting so big, they don't have the talent for it. But that's New Zealand. Like, we could definitely be drawing people in. And there is a lot of talent on the coasts, but there's also a lot of talent here in Columbus, in Ohio, in the Midwest. We don't need necessarily to pull people from the coast. We can kind of do our own thing and be exciting.
Who would be interested in the GDEX Gaming Expo? Is this for anybody?
Yep, it's for anybody. So whether you're a developer, student, a parent who Henry mentioned, like, might have kids that are interested in it. We have a lot of higher education, some of our biggest sponsors. We'll have a company there called GameU, which teaches, it's an after-school weekend program to teach kids game development. Or if you just like games, if you just want to be a part of gamer culture. And we treat it sort of as a weekend celebration of games. So we've got a kickoff party. We've got a dance party. We've got a whole weekend filled with fun stuff to do.
Chris Volpe, thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Chris Volpe is the CEO and co-founder of Multivarious Games and also one of the folks behind the GDEX Gaming Expo. For more information about that coming up later this month, go to the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. And also, Henry Bodden, thanks to you as well.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
Henry Bodden is the lead instructor for the Video Game Art and Animation Program at Columbus State Community College. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. More of Tech Tuesday is still to come. But first, News Director Mike Thompson joins me in the studio with a very special offer just for Tech Tuesday listeners.
That's right, Ann. You have about 20 minutes left to enter to win an Amazon Echo and support 89.7 NPR News. This is something special we are doing for this hour only. This is just for Tech Tuesday listeners. Go to WOSU.org or give by calling 1-866-897-9678. Make a gift, either by phone or on the web, and be automatically entered to win one of two Amazon Echoes. That's right, two lucky winners will be selected at the end of this hour. This is a special hour just for All Sides with Ann Fisher and Tech Tuesday listeners. It's a great opportunity to support your favorite public radio station and possibly win the latest in digital assistants, the Amazon Echo. This is the cylinder smart speaker you've seen on television. Maybe you've seen it in friends and family's homes. No gift is necessary, but your support helps pay for the programs you enjoy. Enter to win the Amazon Echo now. Go to WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678.
Public radio is community radio. That's why 89.7 NPR News brings you All Sides with Ann Fisher, capturing the news, politics, and cultural interests of our unique region. It's why our WOSU news team is out gathering and reporting on key stories and events every day. This powerful service helps you understand Central Ohio just a bit more with stories that impact your life, your work, and your family. But it's powered by you. This station is powered by listeners. Please join in with your 89.7 NPR News donation right now. Go to WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678.
And again, you have about 18 minutes left to enter to win an Amazon Echo. We have two of these to give away. And if you pledge or by going online or calling during the next 20 minutes, you will be automatically entered to win an Amazon Echo smart speaker. It's a great way. It's a great way to listen to WOSU. Let's try it out. All right, let's try it out. Hopefully it'll work. Alexa, turn on WOSU.
WOSU FM from TuneIn.
Echo smart speaker. It's a great way. It's a great way.
Alexa,
to
turn off.
Okay, so there was a little delay there.
A little
there.
Delay, mm-hmm. Because I said a bad word. Yeah. Shiloh, the other word, could turn it off. But you
that's
can see how
secret,
it works.
Secret.
But you could be brushing your teeth, right, and then yell across your bedroom and to Alexa to turn on WOSU, and it'll happen. It's really cool. This is the future of listening, and something that we're really paying attention to in the radio industry and all industries, mm-hmm. in fact, the newspapers as well. We have two Echoes to give away this hour. Just call now, 1-866-897-9678, or go online at WOSU.org. It just takes a few minutes of your time. Support All Sides. Support Tech Tuesday, the great tech news you enjoy and rely on each and every Tuesday. Give now at WOSU.org or by calling 1-866-897-9678.
You're listening to Tech Tuesday on All Sides with Ann Fisher. For Apple fans, today is a big day. The latest edition of the iPhone 8, is set to launch at a special event in just a few hours. As always, the rumor mill is churning in anticipation of the latest smartphone from Apple. Joining us now to talk about that and other tech news is contributing editor at Android Central, Russell Holley. Welcome back, Russell.
Thank you.
It's the 10-year anniversary of the iPhone. Are you expecting anything really big or just really expensive?
Well, I mean, there's no reason it can't be both. But definitely price is something that a lot of people have been talking about over really the last month and a half. It kind of started with Samsung. The Note 8, was reaching $1,000 with some of its options that you could get the Samsung Galaxy Note 8. And we're hearing a lot of the same, whisperings for at least one version of the iPhone that is going to be released today, where it could be either at the $1,000 mark or above the $1,000 mark for some of the pricing available for one of the options, not all of them.
One rumor is that the iPhone will replace the home button on the phone. What is that and what might be changing?
Yeah, so if you look at every iPhone that has ever been released, there's always been a circular button at the bottom of the phone that you press to return to your home screen from no matter where you are in the operating system. And over time, Apple has enhanced that button to do other things. You can double tap on it to see other apps that you have opened recently, or you can it is, you know, recently been used for a fingerprint sensor. It's a pretty versatile little button that's been there, but pretty much all of Apple's competition has done away with that button in exchange for you know, a larger screen size and kind of a smaller form factor. So it looks like with at least one version of the phone that's being released today, what they're calling the iPhone X, Apple is going to be doing away with that home button in exchange for kind of an interactive bottom section to the screen where you're going to swipe up and you know, kind of press on the screen and feel that kind of vibration feedback like you feel with one of the more recent iPhones. But that may not be the case for the iPhone 8, which is a separate version of the iPhone that should also be announced today.
So much to talk about. Apple was criticized, I guess it was for the 7, for not having a standard headphone jack. How did that end up working out, and what do you expect this time?
Well, it turned out nobody bought that phone at all. There are no iPhone 7s. It's definitely not one of the world's most popular phones. You know, it's the headphone jack. Apple was not the first company.
He's just joking, folks, by the way, in case people.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely the most popular iPhone that was ever sold. People really didn't care, it turns out.
Yeah.
You know, it's Bluetooth headphones have been growing in popularity over the last decade. It's definitely become, you know, kind of the default way that a lot of people listen to music anyway. Someone like me, it is kind of a bummer to not have the headphone jack occasionally when I need it for something, but it's definitely not my default for communication. And I think a lot of people, Apple saw that trend, you know, kind of going. So like several other phone manufacturers, they ditched the headphone jack, and it turned out to not be a huge deal. And so that's definitely going to be a trend that continues with future iPhones. If you are hoping that that Apple would see the error of their ways and put it back, I can assure you that is not going to happen today.
Wireless charging is another rumor. What's that about?
Well, you know, this is something that people have wanted Apple to put on their phones for at least the last 5 generations of the phone, because it's been on other phones for at least that long, and Apple has decided that wasn't the route to go for a long time. You know, in some cases, due to the back of the phone being metal, which doesn't work well for wireless charging, and in other cases, it helps, you know, keep the profile of the phone thinner, and Apple phones have always been kind of famous for being some of the thinner, lighter phones that are out there. So whether this version of the phone actually has wireless charging is something that we will hear about later today. It would certainly be nice. It's something that worked very well for them with the Apple Watch, where they were able to use, you know, kind of that magnetic pin for wireless charging. So it would be cool to see that, you know, show up on this. But again, we may wind up with, you know, kind of this weird iPhone X that has all of this kind of future thinking technology in it, where Apple's testing the waters to see just how far away from the original design they can go and have people still buy the phone. And we may see a more standard version iPhone 8 that doesn't have, you know, all of these kind of out there features and is instead just a really solid phone.
What are you expecting regarding incorporation of virtual reality and augmented reality features?
Well, we definitely know that augmented reality is the direction that Apple has been leaning for a while now. You know, they announced what they called AR Kit at their Worldwide Developer Conference earlier this year, and developers have taken to it in spades. There are just a massive number of, you know, kind of these developer teasers that are out where people have taken their phones and done everything from looking at you know, dancing feet on the ground and kind of silly smiley emoji floating in the air to actual recreations of the Falcon 9 shuttle taking off. There have been a lot of really kind of impressive videos that have come from that. So I think that is going to be a big part of the next year, is Apple opening that up to developers and developers being able to kind of create ideas. The thing that we don't know is how well users are going to pick that up and say, hey, this is the thing that I have to have on my phone and be willing to spend money on it. Mm-hmm. If it's kind of a flash in the pan or a fun little gimmick, then it may just be an exciting thing for a couple of weeks and then it kind of fades away. But we don't know yet.
The prices you already mentioned, upwards around 1,000 and plus, and that just feels like a real mile marker to me.
It's definitely, you know, it's an extreme case, and I think it's going to be, I think it's only going to apply to the iPhone X. I think the iPhone 8 is going to be very similarly priced to what you see the iPhone 7 at now, where off contract, it's starting at that $700 range and you know, increasing slowly as you decide that you want more storage available on your phone. I definitely don't think that you're going to be starting at $1,000 unless you are kind of the gadget hungry person who absolutely must have the, you know, the top of the line thing that Apple makes.
Or just money to burn,
yeah.
Any other rumors we should know about regarding this unveiling in a few hours?
Well, so a couple other things that Apple may or may not be looking at today is an update to their AirPods that they announced last year, the kind of wireless headphones that were entirely too expensive and did not sound very good last year. It's looking like they probably refreshed those a little bit, and we may see a 4K-supported version of the Apple TV. So you can connect to 4K televisions and actually watch 4K content, which is something that the current Apple TV can't do. It only does 1080p things from Netflix and YouTube and things like that. Whereas you'd be able to access the 4K library of content on this new version that would probably be released today.
Well, I guess we'll talk about, instead of the what might be happening, what did happen next week, right?
Absolutely.
You also wanted to talk about a new wearable camera. It's called Front Row. What does it look like? What does it do?
It is the weirdest thing that I think I've ever seen.
And you've seen some weird things.
Right. Yeah. So it almost looks like a pocket watch, but the design is such that you wear it around your neck and it has a camera on it. It has a camera and a display, and it's part of a category of devices that I already kind of feel ambivalent towards. It's life logging devices, where the camera kind of rests on your body, and at random intervals or at, you know, specific intervals that you've given it, it takes photos of just whatever is immediately in front of you. And at the end of the day, you can look and just kind of replay your day, through the lens of this camera that was being worn on your chest.
All right. This sounds kind of Black Mirror-y to me.
Black Mirror did take the idea of life logging and turn it into a really fun episode. It's actually one of my favorites. As creepy as that episode was.
A fun episode.
it was super creepy, but like I got to the end of the episode and went, you know, as an idea, like, you know, it's not without merit.
Yeah.
Which, you know, says more about me, I guess. But the whole idea here is that you've got this smart gadget on your chest that allows you to, you know, have your hands free to do whatever, you know, you were going to do anyway. And at the end of the day, you can say, you know, this cool picture that I took, I can then share to my friends on Facebook and not have to do the thing where you stop and pull your phone out and take the photo. And from that perspective, it's a cool idea. But this particular camera is it's a $400 camera, and it really is a little bigger than it should be because it has a display on it. And so you wind up having what looks like a large piece of jewelry hanging from your chest that is kind of taking pictures of the world around you all day long. And that's undeniably weird. Whether or not it's something that ends up being a good idea is kind of yet to be seen. But it's definitely unusual from how we currently use devices.
You sort of described what you could do with it. Who is a camera like this designed for? I mean, what's the market?
Well, you know, life logging has slowly become more popular for people who are, you know, going to special events or you know, taking their family on vacations to specific places. You know, because it stops them from having to stop every couple minutes to take a picture of something. They can look back at their day and kind of see that they have those pictures. But $400 is definitely way high for something that I would only pull out when I was taking the kids to Busch Gardens or something like that.
Does it take good quality photos and videos?
The photos aren't bad. They're not quite as nice a quality as you would get from your phone. You know, our phone cameras are just really exceptional now, and they're very good pictures, but they're definitely not as good as they would be if you were to stop everything and pull out your phone and take a picture.
You wanted to talk, we only have about a minute left, about a walkie-talkie app that's been used after hurricanes and other natural disasters. And I have seen reference to it when I've Googled Irma and things like that. It's called Zello, right?
Yeah, so this is it was, you know, kind of a joke, and I say that in the least obnoxious way possible over the last 2 weeks, because there were a group of people who were kind of lamenting the loss of push-to-talk phones, you know, like the Nextel phones, where you could, you know, you could use that walkie-talkie feature, because in emergency situations like this. You know, friends of mine that are first responders, that was, you know, kind of their bread and butter, having access to that feature to reach out to friends and reach out to coworkers was invaluable. And it took a little bit of discovery on some people's part, but the feature just kind of moved into software. Instead of having a physical button for push to talk, walkie-talkie conversations, Zello is an app that is, you know, it's a free app for everyone, and it's a chat app where you join groups of friends and you can have these, you know, these push to talk style conversations with people. And there are several amazing stories that have come out of both the Harvey and Irma hurricanes of Zello being used as a way of communicating with people and even you know, people with access to, you know, life-saving materials and boats and stuff, being able to communicate with members of the Cajun Navy and you know, other groups that were actively out helping people. And it was just a really fascinating tool that has been there the whole time. Mm-hmm. But you know, as a result of these storms, you know, just kind of exploded in popularity as people realized that this was an option again.
Russell Holly, as always, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
It's been a pleasure.
Russell Holly, contributing editor at Android Central. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Joining me in the studio again is News and Programming Director Mike Thompson with your last chance to support Tech Tuesday and be registered to win an Amazon Echo.
That's right. You have about 5 or 6 minutes left to enter to win an Amazon Echo and support 89.7 NPR News. This is something special we are doing during this hour only. It's just for Tech Tuesday listeners. Go to WOSU.org or go to 1-866-897-9678. Make a gift either by phone or on the web and be automatically entered to win one of two Amazon Echoes. That's right. Two lucky winners will be selected at the end of this hour. This is a special hour just for All Sides with Ann Fisher Tech Tuesday listeners. A great opportunity to support your favorite public radio station and possibly win the latest in digital assistance, the Amazon Echo. No gift is necessary, but your support helps pay for the programs you enjoy. Enter to win an Amazon Echo now, just a few minutes left. Go to WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678.
On All Sides with Ann Fisher, you hear from new authors, you hear from historians, as well as the latest news stories. I also talk about local food and local arts. Every Tuesday, you hear Tech Tuesday on All Sides, where we talk about the latest technology and gadgets, just like today. On Wednesday each week, you hear Wellness Wednesday for discussions of the latest in medicine and tips on diet and exercise. If these types of discussions are important to you, then now is the time to make a gift of support. Your call right now will help pay for All Sides in the months to come. Visit WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. Again, that's 1-866-897-9678. And Mike wants to tinker with Alexa again.
We're going to tinker. We're going to show you how it works. This is how it works. Alexa, turn on WOSU.
WOSU FM from TuneIn.
979-678. And Mike wants to. I sound like I have a stuffy nose.
There it is. There's that delay again. Alexa, turn off.
Turn on WOSU. Okay.
There we go. See?
WOSU FM from TuneIn. 979-678.
Okay.
Alexa, turn
out
off.
Of control now. Alexa, this is a size. It looks about the size of a hockey puck.
This is the dot. This is
This is Alexa. Real, okay.
This is the Alexa okay. Echo is the model above that. We're just showing you that because that's all we had in the studio right now. So. Alexa Echo is the tall cylinder. It's really a nice speaker. It's a stereo speaker. It's a nice sound. You can listen to music. You listen to a podcast. You can listen to WOSU. It's a great prize. It's in smart speakers. It's where we're going. You can turn off the lights. You can close your garage door with these smart speakers. You can get recipes. You can find out if the Indians won last night, 19th in a row. This is where technology is heading, and we have two of these Amazon Echoes to give away this hour. Just a few minutes left. Go online at WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678.
Well, just a little over 2 minutes to go. This is your chance to enter to win an Amazon Echo and support 89.7 NPR News. Anyone who gives this hour only will be automatically entered to win. And at the end of the hour, we will pick two lucky winners who will get Amazon Echoes. Your chances of winning are pretty good, but you only have 2 minutes to go now. You could enter online at WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. I ran into a lady in the grocery store the other day. She recognized me, and the first thing she said about the program is she loves the show, but she said she loves Tech Tuesday. You know, we talked about Russell Holly together for a while, and I told her I just met Russell for the first time in 6 years. I've been interviewing him every Tuesday on Tech Tuesday, and there he was. We met briefly in an airport. So, I mean, these are real people that come to you every week to talk about tech news. It's valuable. It's something you use every day. Enter to win an Amazon Echo. With the smart speaker, you have access to Alexa voice control, and you'll be able to ask Alexa just about anything. Call 1-866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org and show your support for All Sides with Ann Fisher, for Tech Tuesday, and for everything we do for you on 89.7 NPR News.
Just about 1 minute left. 1 minute left to enter the drawing for one of two Amazon Echoes. We are giving away two this hour here on listener-supported WOSU-FM and HD1 Columbus. We rely on listener support to keep this station strong. 1-866-897-9678 or go online at WOSU.org. Enter to win one of two Amazon Echoes, the smart speaker that's great, that's changing the way we operate around the house. 1-866-897-9678 or go online at WOSU.org.
This is listener-supported WOSU-FM and HD1 Columbus. Remember, no gift is necessary. See our website for complete rules and more information. Again, two people will win this hour. Make a one-time gift of $75 or $100 right now, or make a gift of $10 a month as a sustainer. Visit WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. Again, go to WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678 to enter the sweepstakes. And thanks for listening.